Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, training camp is upon us. There is no turning back now. It is here. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of training camp, we have to finish what we started in our last episode, which was to preview training camp. We covered most of the offense in our previous episode. So let's move on to the defense without further ado, and starting with the big guys up front, the defensive line, just about every position group for the Packers has that one guy who's sort of the leader, the standout guy, and no question on the defensive line, this is Mike Daniels' unit, isn't it?
It is, and it's been that way now for the past few years, and the thing that I find that's most interesting when you look at the defensive line in particular, Mike McCarthy had his season opening press conference on Wednesday. And he mentioned, you know, it's about programs win championships and everything that you do. They're not going to be a team that, you know, sells the farm for 1 year to make a run at a championship.
Right.
They're going to be a team that does things through the long run. And I think when you look at how they've improved this defensive line, this run defense over the last two, three seasons, it's all been mostly internal. And now you look at Mike Daniels, the kind of player he's become, a three-down player. No longer are you seeing these kind of shorter, stouter, sawed-off interior pass rushers as these guys that are getting picked on the third day now. You're seeing them start to work their way up draft boards because they really are becoming sort of the difference maker now in a lot of these fronts. Mike Daniels, every single time we've heard somebody talk about, oh, he's not good enough to play on, you know, first down. He's not good enough to be anything more than a situational rusher. He's proved people wrong. A two-time Pro Bowl alternate now, trying to get to his first Pro Bowl.
That's right.
The league's catching on. I mean, we seem to be saying that every year, but really, I think everybody understands his value to this defense.
Yeah, a really interesting mix here on the Packers defensive line, the veteran guys with young guys. LaTroy Guyon is also back, though he's suspended for the first four games of the regular season, so we will have to see how that roster situation shakes out in time. But you bring in Ricky Jean-Francois, a free agent from San Francisco. He's another veteran presence in there. And then you have Dean Lowry and Kenny Clark, two draft picks from last year. You add Montrevious Adams in this year's draft. Brian Price and Christian Ringo, two other young players who have spent time on the practice squad, some time on the active roster, also going to be in that mix fighting for roster spots. This is, to me, this is one of the more intriguing mixes of young guys with the older veteran players as far as a position group that the Packers have.
It really is, and you and I discussed this in the offseason. I mean, the Packers, they're going to need those defensive linemen to play a bigger role in that front on all three downs this year. I think you're going to see Dean Lowry used in a multitude of different ways. I think Kenny Clark is probably the leader in the clubhouse as it is going into camp to be that guy that's going to be next to Mike Daniels early on in the season. Ricky Jean-Francois, he had time in San Francisco, Indianapolis, Washington, all three, four base defenses. He can play anywhere on those fronts. A really intriguing guy from that perspective that the Packers, I think, had their eye on for a number of years. And then also, let's talk about Montrevious Adams. The fact that you can make a case, the number eight run defense a year ago, that might have been a position where the Packers didn't have to add a body. Well, as it turns out, they bring in Jean-Francois and they bring in Adams, who had a really interesting career at Auburn, very impactful as an interior rusher, has that quick twitch they look for in those type of defensive linemen. A lot of different guys are going to be competing for playing time, and I think when you look historically, when the Packers have had some of their best defensive fronts, some of their best run defenses, it's been when you can kind of circle in and rotate in a multitude of guys, so it isn't just on Mike Daniels to play, you know, 68% of the snaps or whatever it was last season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that rotation up front is big. We've talked a lot about, you know, defensive fronts in the fourth quarter and what you can do with the game on the line. If you've had some of these defensive linemen out there for 50, 55 snaps through the first three quarters, they might not have a whole lot left in the fourth quarter. You've got to develop a really deep group of guys, and that's what the Packers are working on, particularly with the young guys behind these veterans.
And that's the most exciting thing, Mike. When you look at the defensive line last year, where did they get their biggest push near the end of the season? It was from Dean Lowry. It was from Kenny Clark. I think they're expecting the same thing with Montrevious Adams this year. You know, work him into this, get him comfortable in this defense and see what he gives you down the stretch. That's really when you look at historically where the Packers have made their biggest jump, it's been towards those end of the seasons. That's where Mike Daniels back in 2013 started to really make some noise. So at Clark, who ended up being the Packers Hall of Fame Rookie of the Year, we found out this past week.
That's right.
A really young, dynamic player, only 21 years old. He's going to be a guy that I think a lot of people are looking forward to, you know, potentially being able to make that big jump that Daniels did in 2013.
All right. Well, we've got some other defensive positions to talk about, Wes, and we'll do that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, moving on to the linebacker position as we continue our preview of the Packers defense as training camp opens here. An interesting nugget, I thought, from Mike McCarthy from his Wednesday press conference. He talked about how you really can't count on anything carrying over from one season to the next. As strong as the Packers finished with the 8 straight wins to get to the NFC Championship game, you can't count on things carrying over from one year to the next. And when I look at the outside linebackers in particular for the Packers, I think it really applies because you have Clay Matthews and Nick Perry at the top of the depth chart, but because of injuries, those guys weren't really on the field together all that much right. In the big picture in 2016. You lose Julius Peppers and Daytone Jones in free agency, so now the guys behind Matthews and Perry, Jayrone Elliott, Kyler Fackrell, rookie Vince Beagle, who's coming off of an off-season foot surgery. A lot of transition here in terms of how this Packers pass rush from the edges is going to take shape.
Yeah, definitely, Mike. And it is interesting. When you look at the top of that depth chart, Clay Matthews, Nick Perry, this was always the plan. You go back to 2012, the Packers invest a first-round pick into Nick Perry. They wanted this to be the duo. Now, there were so many different routes and detours that they took in that, you know, Eric Walden ended up starting most of that 2012 season. Mike Neal gets moved over to outside linebacker. Julius Peppers comes in.
Well, and Matthews moves to inside linebacker in 2014 and part of 2015 as well.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's been so many, like, little bit of divergence from it, but now they're getting back to what that nucleus was supposed to be at the beginning, and I think that's exciting. Number one question you and I were asked throughout the offseason program, do the Packers have enough depth at that edge rusher position?
Yep.
The one thing I was telling a lot of people, it's interesting that you have two first-round draft picks, a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and, you know, Jayrone Elliott at that position.
An undrafted guy who's now in his fourth year in the NFL.
You flash back to 2010, Frank Zombo starting at outside linebacker for them, an undrafted rookie. Desmond Moses started 6 games as an undrafted rookie in 2012.
Brad Jones in 2009 as a seventh-round rookie.
So they've had young guys play in this defense that weren't even draft picks. Now you're at this position where you have two bona fide top-level pass rushers and two really good developmental draft picks behind them. I've always said, don't confuse a lack of depth with a lack of proven depth. That's been my big phrase this offseason. I might patent it. And I really just want to see how Kyler Fackrell and Vince Beagle, when he is on the field, however that's going to shuffle out, what those guys can give.
Yeah.
Because, it's going to be tough. Even if both Perry and Matthews are healthy all year long, you still need that rotation. And who's going to be the guy that steps up is what I'm going to be watching once camp begins.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a situation where that depth chart behind the two starters really is wide open. You made a comment in our insider inbox this past week. Somebody other than Matthews or Perry needs to get into that, you know, half dozen sack range. And, you know, for the Packers, it needs to be an Elliott or a Beagle or a Fackrell. One of those guys needs to be that. You're not necessarily going to get a half dozen sacks from an interior rusher. Now, Mike Daniels or someone like that could do that, but it's the outside rushers that are going to get more opportunities.
Well, and you always have that, like, you know, graduating wins kind of, you know, ratio when you look back to, you know, pitchers and things like that, you know, guys that you have to replace to be able to get to where you want to go. End of the day, the Packers have 8.5 sacks to replace without Peppers and Daytone Jones. Who are going to be the guys that step up and take those? I think Clay Matthews can factor into that too. I mean, they missed him for, you know, a good deal of last season, at least being in 100% sort of playing capacity, but a lot of potential there. I really want to see what Fackrell does specifically. You know, you wrote about it this offseason. He put more weight on his frame.
Yep.
And I think that's a guy, he was a third round pick for a reason. I think the Packers are still really high on him.
Yeah, and they need him to really be in shape conditioning-wise and everything, because he does play on special teams. Yeah, he's going to play more snaps on defense. So that bigger NFL body for the long haul will be important. But to touch on the inside linebackers as well, not as much change potentially here. You've still got, in whatever order you want to put them, Jake Ryan, Blake Martinez, Joe Thomas are your three main guys. I continue to envision much the same of what we saw last year in terms of mixing and matching who's in which package, playing on what down, you know, what pairing works best with certain personnel groups. I think Dom Capers is going to continue to shuffle those three guys around. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think probably the biggest constant is going to be Jake Ryan, assuming he's healthy and can stay healthy. He's a, you know, first and second down player.
Yep.
I think he's earned that role the way he's played in that tackling first capacity. But beyond that, it's going to be really interesting to watch, because you and I have talked about Morgan Burnett in the past, playing more near the line of scrimmage. Josh Jones is a guy that could potentially be used in that capacity.
Definitely.
So trying to figure out where Dom Capers draws the line, when you want Joe Thomas on the field, when you want Morgan Burnett on the field. In a lot of ways, the injury sort of dictated that last year. When Blake Martinez was hurt, well, then that's when Joe Thomas stepped up. And then when, you know, Jake Ryan was out, well, then that's when, you know, they move guys around. So if everything's equal, how do they use those guys is probably one of the bigger storylines, I think, of camp, and also getting into the first few weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, and I want to point out, I think one of the most overlooked or underreported statistics maybe from the 2016 defense was that the Packers had their worst games against the run when Jake Ryan was
correct,
not in there. So that's something to keep an eye on, I think, as we go forward. But we're going to throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, we'll move on to the defensive backs here as we wrap up our defensive preview of the 2017 training camp. And this is probably the group on defense that is going to get the most attention, have the most eyes on it, the most analysis, whatever you want to say. And if we start at cornerback, I thought it was interesting. Mike McCarthy made the comment on Wednesday in his press conference that you know, there's really no waiting around for young players when it comes to training camp. OTAs are for learning, but it's go time when training camp rolls around. And I think that's very interesting. It's going to be a challenge for Kevin King, the Packers' first draft pick, the second rounder out of Washington. No fault of his own, but because of the school schedule and the NFL rule, he wasn't able to be here during OTAs.
Right.
Now, Mike McCarthy said mentally he's ready to go, but still, it's going to be a challenge for him to really be getting that first set of reps here as training camp begins. For a young guy, when you're talking about a young guy the Packers are potentially going to count on to play a significant role in this defense, I think he does have a challenge in front of him.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, I mean, it's not like when he got back for minicamp, they just threw him out there against Jordy Nelson, too, or anything, although the veterans weren't here at that point. I mean, they really kept, you know, took him along slowly once
yep.
he finally was in Green Bay. So the mental thing's big. I mean, you have to be able to overcome that that hurdle going into the NFL, particularly at that cornerback position. So as long as he's book smart in that way and knows where he's supposed to be at in the playbook, you know, that's going to be half the battle. But it is getting the reps in practice now. It is being able to start to gain that comfortability, you know, comfort level again for him, because it has been a long time now, you know, since he played that position, really,
yeah.
other than, you know, just trying to do all the drills and everything to get ready for the NFL scouting combine. So that's going to be something that him and Joe Witt, I know, have worked extensively on to make sure he's up to speed. But the thing that's probably the most interesting with this group right now, with King included, is that, you know, Witt has said in the past, you know, he looks at the depth chart. It's not like he's really focused in on like a number one or number two. There really isn't a whole lot separating these guys. I mean, Devon House is no question the leader in that room right now, but it's a wide open race. And once this training camp gets started and they get into preseason games, everybody's competing for a job.
Yeah, well, and this will be one of those proof is in the pudding type of years for the Packers and their draft and develop
right.
philosophy and draft and develop program, when you have these three third-year cornerbacks, Demaryius Randall, Quentin Rollins, Ladarius Gunter. All of them have played well at times. All of them have had their struggles at times. We've seen it. over the course of their first two seasons. It's to be expected. It's the toughest defensive position to play in the NFL.
Oh, especially
young guys,
now.
Yeah, young guys are going to take their lumps at that spot. But the Packers have to see what they've got now. Hopefully they stay healthy, which wasn't the case for Randall and Rollins, unfortunately, last year. But a lot of development, a lot still lies ahead for these guys, and the Packers are going to need them, point blank.
And then first and foremost, just want to mention, too, Demaryius Randall playing that star slot position now in the nickel defense. I think that's going to be really good for him.
Looks like that's where he belongs, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, because you think about it, that's the playmaking spot.
Yep.
You saw what, for so many years, what Charles Woodson did there. Casey Hayward was a defensive rookie of the year finalist when he played that position in 2012. Demaryius Randall's a ball hawk. You know, for all the ups and downs that he had last year, I think it's still, what, 8 interceptions he's had so far in his career?
In 2 years, yeah, including playoffs, he's had 8 of them, yeah.
It just comes down to the consistency side of it. I think that's going to be a good move for him, especially now with the amount of depth that they have at those boundary corner spots.
Yeah. Well, and looking at safety, you touched on it before. We're going to be watching exactly where the Packers' safeties are lining up. Ha-ha Clinton Dix is maybe not so much the move-around rover type of guy, but Morgan Burnett, Josh Jones, they might be playing at the line of scrimmage. They might be playing more in center field. You like what the Packers are developing here. You throw in Kentrell Bryce and Marwin Evans, two guys who made the roster last year as undrafted rookies and played a fair amount. Evans mostly on special teams. Bryce got his fair share down the stretch playing on defense. A lot of young talent here for the Packers behind Burnett, who's your veteran guy, and then Clinton Dix, who's coming off his first Pro Bowl season.
Yeah, and it's funny too, Mike, because our game and live production coordinator, Matt Arvin, who also produces our show, he asked me earlier this week, he's putting together player cards for the season, and
okay.
He asked me, you know, Kentrell Bryce, could he start this year? Do you think he's a guy that he should make a card for? And I told him, yeah, because, I mean, there's any of these safeties could end up starting, because who knows where Morgan Burnett's going to be playing? Who knows where Josh Jones is going to be playing? There's so many different potential possibilities for how Dom Capers is going to put these guys to use. The safety position has become an incredibly deep position on this roster in a matter of 4 short years. And for them right now to be in a spot where they can go with Kentrell Bryce in dime situations last year like they did, or being able to use Morgan Burnett as an inside backer when they actually either need to do it out of scheme or just because of injuries.
Right.
There's really the flexibility of that position, I thought, was the biggest strength of that defense a year ago. And it's one of the reasons why when you look more towards these hybrid schemes, I think there's a lot of optimism that this group and what they have back there could really help this defense get to where they want to go in 2017.
Yeah, and I think if you talk to the safety group as a whole, if there's one thing they want to do better than they did in 2016, it's catch the football. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but Ha-Ha Clinton Dix felt he left interceptions out there on the field. Kentrell Bryce felt he left some interceptions on the field, other than the Seattle game when the secondary had the 5 interceptions of Russell Wilson. There were opportunities that literally slipped through their hands, and those are the opportunities they can't let get away in 2017.
Absolutely, and it's the ones that can make a huge difference, not only in the outcome of a game, but also a season.
All right, sounds good. Well, with that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford sitting next to Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, before training camp gets too far into full swing here, we'd be remiss if we didn't at least touch on and congratulate the two latest inductees into the Packers Hall of Fame from this past weekend, Donald Driver and Mark Lee. A big night on Saturday night for them at Lambeau Field. I didn't see Donald Driver smile at all, did you?
Yeah, no. You think the guy would be happy about it? No, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, I think every single photo we took, and I think Evan Siegel, our photographer, might have taken about 800 of them. I don't know if there was one where he didn't have a grin on his face.
Yeah, that was the classic Driver smile was there. And interesting little nugget that came out of that, I had asked Ron Wolf in the press conference before the banquet with the inductees and their presenters. Ron Wolf was presenting Donald Driver. Wolf had drafted Driver in the 7th round in 1999. And I asked him, you know, Wolf had kind of been joking, hey, we didn't even need a wide receiver, and we took this guy, and look what happened. And I asked him, well, if you didn't need a wide receiver, then what prompted you to take him? And he said that they actually had a fourth round grade on Donald Driver. So when they got to the seventh round, his name was sort of sitting at the top of the board because they had more of a mid round grade on him. Nobody had taken him. And so it was literally a matter of best player available. Hey, let's grab this guy. And boy, you talk about something working out for the best for not only Donald Driver, but for the Packers, the fans, the community, everything. Really quite a story.
Yeah, and Ron Wolf gave a hat tip there to Alonzo Highsmith, who's now a senior personnel executive for the Packers. Was actually the one that originally scouted him, made that trip down to Elkhorn State to sort of, you know, find that diamond in the rough. And then, lo and behold, he ends up being the all-time leading receiver in Packers history. A really special night, and I think you could see with Packer fans, too, just how they embraced Driver during his time here and what that relationship and bond was like even after his career, you know, came to a close in 2012. Just really something special and something you just don't see every day, even when you have a guy that was, you know, in a place for 13, 14 years. It was really incredible what they developed.
Yeah, amazing story there with Driver. And with Mark Lee, it's easy to get somewhat spoiled. The Packers have been to the playoffs 8 straight years, going for 9 now, which would tie the NFL record held by Dallas and Indianapolis from a couple of different eras. But Mark Lee, 11 seasons and 2 postseason games as a member of the Green Bay Packers. He had a huge play in that postseason game in Dallas in 1982, the one that knocked the Packers out of the playoffs in the strike year. But boy, a great career, and unfortunately for him, you know, not as much postseason talk about it.
Yeah, it's sobering. People my age don't really understand that. The Packers played in 3 playoff games last year. Mark Lee got 2 in 11 years in Green Bay, and he said that's something that sticks in his mind. But his career, I think he always wondered whether or not he'd get that call 26 years later, gets that opportunity, and he really, really relished it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, congratulations to him. And with that, we're going to sign off on Packers Unscripted for now. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. The team account is at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will see you next time.